So the jam sessions you learned about out in Utah, you brought back to Minnesota and did mm-hmm. those on your farms?
Yeah, on a regular basis.
With other local musicians?
Yep. We have boxes of reel-to-reel tapes we have yet to go through and listen to, but many of our friends would come visit, many bands. It was just a great hang. Wonderful place to be, both farms.
According to Billy Hallquist, there was a kind of a bond between Thunder Tree and Pepper Fog.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. absolutely. Those guys were the best. We would do a lot of gigs together. We'd go see them. They'd come see us. We supported each other. Love those guys. So we just recently, just today, I saw some videos of a reunion that they had here just a couple weeks ago, and sounded fantastic still.
Just recently, I found out about a job you guys played at the Eau Claire Peace Festival held at the University of Wisconsin. Apparently, there were 1,500 people for the outdoor concert. However, it rained, and the concert was moved inside. Other acts at the event were Mandrake Memorial, Towns Van Zandt, Zulu, the Paisleys, Cottonwood, Thunder Tree, the Marauders, Siemens Mark, and Chesterfield Gathering. Wow. Any recollections from that job?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
What sticks in your mind, Greg?
Oh, it was just a. I think it was one of the first bigger shows that we had done since we came back from Salt Lake City the year before. So it's always cool to do those shows and, you know, have some of the other bands come out and go, "Wow, man, you really stretched out, man. Where'd you learn to do that, man?"
By stretching out, you mean jamming?
Jamming, and, you know, how do you guys know when to come back?
Come back to the song?
Yeah.
From the jamming?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was new to us.
So you impressed some people?
Two, I think, yeah.
Did you ever go back to Sound 80 to do some more recording?
We did. I think by that time we had a pretty good cache of original tunes. Our manager at the time, Bruce Brancig, was managing Crow, and he wanted to shop us to some majors. And so we went in and did, I think, probably a dozen tunes or more.
Do you recall any of the titles?
Greyhound Tour.
Going Along for the Ride.
One called The New One.
Yeah, Tumbleweeds.
On the Way Down. I'm Leaving.
Wake Up Harley.
Lazy Wake Up Harley, does that refer to a person or?
Yeah.
It does.
What's the story?
I can't remember who was
Harley. Harley was a janitor at Gustavus Adolphus College in St. Peter, Minnesota.
And you found him asleep one night or what?
I can't remember the story, do you?
I don't know the exact story. I just know he was a pretty cool guy, which, you know, I mean, at the time, when you're running around Minnesota, I'm sure Denny, you can remember, when you're a long-haired musician running around Minnesota, there was a certain amount of prejudice at truck stops and smaller towns. They fear, you know, and Harley was not afraid, and he was just really a nice guy to us all the time. So Dale mm-hmm. ended up writing this song called "Wake Up Harley."
I can't remember why, but it was in his honor.
Yeah.
Anything?
Yeah, good band.
Nothing in particular, I don't think. I think we met girls that smelled like patchouli.
Patchouli oil.
Yeah. Can you see a theme running through here, Tom?
Yes. Hippie chicks.
Let's hear about your van crashing into the woods on the way to Ely.
It was on the way home.
Oh, on the way home. What happened?
Well, we weren't in it. We had a band car and a van. We got home middle of the night, 4 o'clock, and about 5:30 or so, we get a call that the roadies had gone off the road, crashed the van into the woods. So we called another band.
Yeah.
Dick Erickson's and Michael, what's his
Michael
name?
Holm.
Michael Holm's band.
The System.
The system. That's
we
right.
We called The System and borrowed their van to drive up there so we could get our gear, at least,
out of
the woods.
Was your gear damaged?
Couple of pieces. It wasn't bad, I think. Yeah. We had a bunch of Vox gear that had little chrome
frames
protectors.
Yeah, remember those Vox Super Beetles with
Super Beetles with the stand.
Yeah. I've still got my Super Beetle head out in the garage. I think a squirrel's living in it right now.
Now, from what I understand, the band went to a concert at the Guthrie on February 27, 1972, and this had a major influence on the band. Who was the band and what happened?
That was John McLaughlin.
And the Mahavishnu Orchestra.
And wow, did that hit us in the eyes.
Yeah.
That was just incredible.
What do you recall? Bob, were you there?
I was, and Greg thought for some reason that it was going to be a real laid-back act and everything, so he said, yeah, let's do these downers and just go. Mm-hmm. And we went there, and we're just blown away from the first note, the very first note. We'd never heard anything like it. I mean, I didn't even know how to count out that stuff. It was just different time signatures and Billy Cobham on drums. Wow, unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Greg, what do you recall?
I recall we slept through John Prine.
That's because of the Reds, the Downers, yes.
And all we didn't know who John McLaughlin was, but it was right after Jimi Hendrix died, and we had heard on the radio, the greatest guitar player since Jimi Hendrix, tonight at the Guthrie. So we had to go because we were expecting some, you know, rock and roll god. And we get there, and John McLaughlin comes out on stage, and we're all slumped down in our chairs, and he's got short hair. The audacity. He has short hair. And he's all got a white T-shirt and white Levi's. You'd think he was playing in Ogden. And white shoes and a double-neck guitar. And he asked for silence. And we're looking at each other like, what the hell is this? It's like, come on, rock and roll! And after his minute or so of silence, he started intermounting flame. And it's like our mouths hit the floor and we didn't pick them up for 12 years.
And had you heard their music?
No.
Before?
No.
This is the first time?
No, we never listened to any. We didn't hear any on the radio.
Fusion.
We just heard that he was the greatest guitar player since Jimi Hendrix.
Dale, how did you react to seeing this act?
All of our minds were just blown with this. It was a total new level. I mean, it was something that guided us, I think, into the future, because we eventually, really delved into the fusion genre with.
And fusion is jazz and rock combined?
Right.
Pretty much. Yeah. Jazz, rock, jazz, depending on where the guys are coming from.
And this type of music you had not been exposed to ever before?
No. So, here all of a sudden there was this new format where you could interject anything over, rock rhythms and rock instruments. It was just, anything went. It was.
We had a little influence with jazz into jazz from groups like Spirit. You know, they do a little jazz breaks and stuff like that. But this was like totally new harmonic scheme. Totally new rhythm scheme. I mean, songs in 6 2/3 over 4, and just stuff that blew our minds.
Well, it was, the first time we'd ever experimented with alternate time signatures, all the new scales, the new modes, it was just wonderful.
So how does this impact the band after this show?
We started doing more prog rock, progressive rock. We started doing a couple of John McLaughlin songs. We had added a sax player.
And that was who?
Pat Mackin.
What was his background?
He was in high school.
Oh.
And he played all the saxes, barry, tenor, alto, soprano, and flute.
We were introduced to him because we would play various shows and he would show up with his sax. He was a fan of the band, and we'd have him just sit in.
Mm-hmm. And we liked him.
Mm-hmm.
I understand you had the opportunity to see Texas Bill Strength perform on May 4th, 1972 at the Flame Cafe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Bob, Dale, what do you recall about that?
Well, we always used to, we loved going to see the old man. He was just a great, great performer. And he would always pull out the stops when we showed up, when Greg and Bob and I would show up. He would try to make us laugh as much as possible.
What a ham.
He was a ham, yeah. But he was very entertaining, very funny, and, you know, was always had good advice for us. We wouldn't always follow it, but of course, now that we're older, you think back and go, yeah, I guess he was right.
Why, boys, there's only 12 notes. How hard can it be?
That's right. That's one of his famous sayings.
Would it be fair to say the three of you might have stuck out in the crowd at the Flame Cafe?
I think
very
we did.
Fair to say.
Yeah, we did. But our dad was very, very proud of us, no matter what the situation was, and wasn't afraid to let people know it.
That Medicine Lake gig, we went to see him at a little bar on Medicine Lake. He was on stage when we walked in, four or five of us hippies. And we sit down at a table, and all these guys are looking over at us and going, smacking their fists. And Bill gets off stage and comes over and gives us all a hug. Why, boys? And then everybody's our friend, and then everybody's buying us drinks, and, you know, go figure.
I understand in August of 1972, the teen fair was known as the Mind Odyssey.
Right.
Yeah.
And right. You guys performed three shows with who?
That was the...
James Gang.
James Gang.
Joe Walsh.
Yeah.
Bob, anything come to mind from that show?
No.
I remember it was really hot, and all of the stages were painted black, and it was very, very hot. They had a Mellotron there that was the first time anybody had seen a Mellotron.
That's a keyboard that... A
keyboard that had record heads on every key had a loop tape, piece of tape that played a recorded violin sound. Moody Blues used it on Tuesday afternoon. That was
King Crimson used it a lot.
Right.
Do you know which band had that?
That was from a music store, Freedom Electronics, was it?
Maybe, yeah.
Hmm. Did you want to buy one?
Yeah, but they were real expensive.
Very expensive and very difficult to adjust and keep working.
And synthesizers were just coming out, Moogs, ARPs, and we couldn't afford them. That's why we eventually broke up.
Hmm. Did you like the new sounds of these, new technology?
Yeah.
Oh, it was great, yeah.
When we opened for James Gang, what I remember is that after we did three shows opening for him, and after we did our first set, we were advised not to do any James Gang material.
Who advised you?
Their road manager.
Who knows?
Which James Gang songs did you do?
Funk 48, Funk 49, and... Rocky Mountain Way.
Who knows why? Who knows why? We must have been... But they were very nice.
Bob, I understand in fall of 72 you decided to leave Pepperfog. What happened?
Oh, I don't think I decided to leave. I had an opportunity. I knew this was coming down the pike, that people wanted to go different directions, and... there was a guitar player in town here, Zippy Kaplan, who was the player for The Litter here in town, and he had a referral service at the time. And there was a gig opportunity. I think it's like Greg had mentioned earlier, we wanted to start making some money to buy some equipment that we all wanted, the new stuff.
Yeah, I don't want it to sound like Bob left the band, okay. Because we had decided to break up. We signed a pact that we were going to break up for like, couple of years, go off, make money, and buy some of this new technology, and then get back together. It just took us 35 years get back together. But Bobby left because he had an opportunity that came up a couple of weeks before the end of our last gig.
It was just a few weeks, yeah.
Yeah.
And Bob, where did you end up playing?
I ended up down in Tampa, St. Petersburg area of Florida.
A little different than Minnesota?
Very different from Minnesota. I just got lucky down there. All I went down there with was called my dad, and my dad gave me $20. I took six T-shirts with me. Got lucky, got down there. Actually, I got a ride with two friends, two female friends of ours, who were going down for 2 weeks. So they said, come on, we'll give you a ride. And I said, fine. And after 2 weeks, they came back to Minneapolis. I was looking at like a City Pages type magazine down there. And there was a band looking for a drummer who just happened to have a set of drums, you know. And so I got in with them and worked a club or two there. Lived on Madeira Beach. Then I met some other kids, and that was a more rockier thing. I'd be driving from East Coast of Florida to West Coast of Florida and this and that. Just enjoying it. Again, I was very homesick. I haven't been, you know, away all by myself without my bandmates and my brothers here, you know, dealing with Greg. So it was lonely. And then I get a call from my brother, Dale, who said that, let me know that our dad got into a car accident and that Greg and Dale had to come down and get me, which they did. And they came down and loaded up my stuff, what stuff I did have, and got me back to Minneapolis.
And who took over drums after Bob was gone?
Danny Bernice.
Had he been playing in another band, or where did you find him?
Was he with Grizzly?
He was Crockett.
Crockett and Choir Crystal, both those local bands he was with.
Yeah, great guy.
Great guy.
Good drummer.
Yep.
And I understand November 22nd, 1972, is the final job for Pepper Fog at the Armory in Gaylord,
Minnesota.
Final
job for some of us.
What's the story, Greg?
I was unable to make the final job due to an unscheduled meeting with local governmental employees.
Ah, okay. Dale, you recall your final job?
I do recall that. It was a wild night. I think we did the first set, didn't we?
Not me.
We didn't. We didn't even get that far, huh?
We were in the car making up the set list.
Oh, that's right. And we were detained. Mm-hmm. Outside of the club, and Greg was hauled off to the
pokey.
To the pokey. We tried to convince him to handcuff him to the keyboard for the gig, but they wouldn't go along with that. So, but we did manage to. I think we finished the gig.
Yeah, the other guys came up and jammed and filled in. Ronnie Roberts.
Ronnie Roberts
from what was the
Lightning?
Band?
White Lightning.
Well, I don't know if it was Lightning at the time. Okay. What was his other band after Lightning? He had.
Was the band before Lightning?
Was it?
Dancer. Was that after
Lightning?
Was it Dancer or?
Dancer was after Lightning.
Anyway, whatever band Ronnie Roberts had.
So that brings an end to Pepper Fog. So looking back at Pepper Fog, is there any highlight that sticks out to you guys?
I think pretty much the whole experience was incredible. Everything was a highlight. Every day it was wonderful. Just great. Like I say, it was a very free time to be alive. We just concentrated on our music and the women with patchouli oil, and we just had a great old time.
Greg, anything for you that sticks out as a highlight with Pepper Fog?
That I never had any children come up to me and say, "Hi, Dad."
Bob?
For me, it was from that band, we learned how to be a family. As a band, you know, Greg was a honorary son to my daddy, and we just learned how to become a family and to think like a family, and just a great time. Great time.
We do need to mention the Pepper Palace, which was located, I've been told, at 2541 Grand Avenue South, top unit of a duplex.
And our landlord, who was a police officer, lived on first floor.
How'd that work out?
Great. I think he was on the take. He drove a Lincoln. He'd call us up at 1:15 in the morning. "Yeah, guys, it's Roger. You guys are being a little loud." "Hey, no problem, Rog. We'll turn it down, man."
No, at that time, we probably had, even the farms that were secluded, we probably had 20, 25 people over a night, you know. And that's the property too. When we did come back from Salt Lake City, we put the U-Haul van up on bricks and ran the odometer backwards. So it was right outside his bedroom window in the driveway, running backwards all night.
In other words, the tires were running backwards. Right. Yeah. And that would make the odometer go the wrong way?
Yeah. Well, then we got smart and we hooked up an egg beater backwards to the cable and let that run for a day or two. And I think at one point we actually ran it back too far.
And the whole point of this is what?
To not have to pay all the mileage. We'd had that truck for like 8 months. We took it to Salt Lake City and back.
How many miles did you really have on it?
Oh, God.
Thousands.
I just remember the neighbors called the cops because the backup lights, the white backup lights on the back of the truck were shining. And the cops came. And, I mean, they know Roger. They know he's a cop. And they said, well, you could put some boards over it. So we went and cut a couple of boards and propped it up against it. And they went away.
As you know, Billy Hallquist from Thunder Tree has memorialized your band house with a song he wrote called Pepper Palace.
That's right.
Pepper Palace. Fang! Pepper Palace.
We were
garbage.
Very close to those guys. And so that meant a good feeling to know that they do something like that.
What does Fang relate to?
Dog.
Oh, okay.
Dale's dog.
Well, as we talked about earlier, last Saturday in St. Louis Park, Thunder Tree performed their very first reunion concert. And as part of their show, they performed Pepper Palace.
They did.
Wow.
We didn't know that.
Wow. I hope that's on video somewhere.
It is.
That's funny.
Yeah. Bob, Greg, and Dale, thank you for taking the time to stop by Sunrise Sound today and share with us the story of your time in Pepper Fog.
Tom and Denny, thank you so much. Yeah. It's a very, very good pleasure.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Denny.
The preceding interview was recorded on August 24th, 2013, at Sunrise Sound in Rogers, Minnesota, and was produced by Denny Johnson and Tom Campbell. The copyright owner of this interview is MinniePaulMusic.com.
All your friends and their relations.